New West Group is a nationally recognized healthcare staffing agency with over 30 years of experience connecting clinicians to leading health systems. In 2023, they were honored as the top travel nurse agency by nurse.org. But New West is more than just travel staffing. They excel in placing local, temp-to-hire, and direct talent as well. Discover their full-service concierge approach at newwestgroup.com. This month's sponsor of our Travel Nursing and Allied Life podcast is Curavetti Medical Staffing. Join the team that has your back all day, every day. At Curavetti Medical Staffing, they work hard to earn your loyalty by helping you succeed personally and professionally. Curavetti Medical Staffing offers higher pay, extensive benefits, and 24/7 personal support. Let's work together. Curavetti Medical Staffing.
You're listening to Travel Nursing and Allied Life, hosted by Travel.
This is your host, Dr. Dylan Collier. I'm here with some friends of mine, Dr. Tori and Dr. Devin Riley. We are going to be talking all things Alaska today. I'm very excited for this. I got to go through a learning process doing Alaska, as I'm sure you guys have as well. But before we jump in, can you give the listeners just kind of like a background of you guys, how long you've been traveling, how long you've been in Alaska, anything else pertinent?
So I'm Tori.
And I'm Devin.
And we've been traveling together. This is going on our 9th year, which is crazy. We thought we would travel for maybe a year or two when we graduated. We're both from New Jersey, and we went to PT school and undergrad in New Jersey. We'd made a really big first move away from home. We went to Arizona. Since then, we've done, I think, 20 travel contracts, if not more, in 12 different states. We've worked in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, North Carolina, South Carolina, Colorado, Arizona, California, Washington. And we've kind of traveled back and forth between Alaska on and off for the last 3 years. So we've definitely spent the most time in Alaska as travelers. So I think we can give some like good tips on, you know, things to do here if you're looking to come live here, and then just tips about finding jobs here. The Alaska market is definitely unique in relation to some other states. Most Alaska jobs do want like a 6-month commitment. Like a lot of contracts up here are like 6 months to a year long, opposed to like your traditional 13 weeks. And, you know, I think the reason for that is if everyone just came here for 13 weeks, they'd want June, July, August. So the clinics get a little bit of coverage, whether that be in the spring or the fall, with the 6-month commitment. They have a harder time staffing through the winter. So, you know, they really like to get that longer commitment if they can. And we did not plan to stay here through the winter ever. We came up, it was supposed to be like an April through October situation. And you know, if you guys have ever traveled here or planning to, you'll learn it's not easy to get here. It's really far away. It's expensive to get here. There's several options on ways to get here. You can, you know, drive through Canada. It might be a 4,000-mile road trip, which is expensive in terms of gas and lodging. You can fly and ship a vehicle, which might actually be one of the lesser expensive options if you fly out of Seattle and put a car on a barge up. And then you can also take a ferry out of Washington. And we've actually never done the road trip through Canada. The first time we moved here, we had never flown our dogs on an airplane. So we didn't want to do that route. So we took the ferry. It was during 2021. So, you know, shortly after COVID, and Canada was still pretty locked down. We could have driven through because we had jobs, but we would have only had like 4 days. We wouldn't be able to do any of like the sightseeing tourist stuff. And that just didn't really sound like a good time. So we opted for the ferry and we put a vehicle on there, and it was a really fun experience. It's expensive. I don't know if we'd do it again, but I think it's worth trying one time. We made some friends on there and it was fun. We kind of went through that Inside Passage, like going through Canada and Alaska, and it was really beautiful.
Dope. I'm going to ask more about the ferry here in a little bit. So to recap, how long have you guys been in Alaska?
On and off for about 3 years. We've taken contracts elsewhere, took time off, and went back for our wedding and honeymoon to Europe. Yeah. So we've pretty much kind of been on and off here, but we have left for significant periods of time each year. We actually prefer the winter here, which is a little bit unique. Wow. Which kind of kept us keep our foot in the door here and come back, because a lot of travelers now, it's getting very competitive, especially with social media really promoting Alaska and everyone really wanting to get here in the summer. It's been really nice to prefer the winter with, you know, my hobbies being backcountry skiing and mountaineering and things like that, that we can kind of, you know, leave and come back in the winter time to get a job back and then, you know, hold on to it throughout the summer. So we kind of like to leave during the, you know, the less popular, like the spring and the fall, and then make sure we kind of lock down a job in the winter and stay through summer.
Nice. Yeah. I know you guys have helped quite a few, especially travel therapists, coming up to Alaska and giving some pointers and tips and throwing some get-togethers and such. We'll get all your socials and stuff for those that still have questions at the end of this episode. But you guys should definitely follow Tori and Devin on Insta. They have a lot of great photos, a lot of adventure photos. So if you're into backcountry skiing, mountaineering, that kind of stuff, like they're must follows for sure.
One of the best things about Alaska is that travel community. You pretty much instantly have like a family of friends and networks when you get up here that helps you kind of get included on the excursions and recommendations for the outings. And there's some really like neat things you can do that sometimes require reservations. And it's hard to know about that when you're coming up here as a traveler. But if you kind of get in with a group of friends, it makes it a little bit easier, because some of them have been here for a bit of time and they've heard about these reservations, and they have a reservation and they can add on a person or include you in their camping. And it makes it so you can kind of do stuff that you didn't really know about before you got up here, which is pretty cool.
Definitely cool.
I think at one of our recent meetups, there was like over 40 travelers, and it's primarily therapists, a lot of PT, OT, some speech, a couple nurses came too, but it is really crazy to see. It's such a transient population in Alaska. They have a hard time keeping full-time workers. It's a huge military population. So a lot of times like military spouses might be a healthcare worker, but they might only be up here for 2 or 3 years and then they're leaving, going to their next place. So there's just a huge need for medical workers. So it tends to be a really great place to work. I feel like I don't want to talk badly about other assignments and other jobs, but I feel like haven't been treated as well as I have here. You know, in terms of time off requests, they're very generous in time off. I work outpatient here. Devin's doing home health here, and we both love our jobs. That's part of why we return. And it's hard to find outpatient PT. That's one patient an hour. And I've only ever been one-on-one. And I came from a two patient an hour job. And, you know, it's just really nice. It's better for everyone. It's better for me. It's better for the patient. So all around, that's why we continue to stay here. Our families, they just don't get it. They're like, why Alaska? I'm like, well, you know, the pay is good. The work-life balance is amazing, and the access to the outdoors is, and we moved from Denver. So we've lived out in the areas, but you know, the ski mountains in Denver, you're driving at least an hour, if not more, and traffic. And, you know, we can be skiing like 15 minutes from our front door, and it's just really cool. And you can really be active year round if that's, you know, some of your interests.
Now that you say that, I definitely noticed that even with just networking with, you know, permanent workers there, that they seem to have more time off during the year than what a traditional healthcare worker would have in the lower 48. And the patient care ratios, I don't know if ratios is the right term because we're talking about therapy, but the one patient per hour seems to be more of the norm that I've seen. We're just talking with different people versus, yeah, especially like Southern and East Coast, like you're seeing four in an hour.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the normal.
I'm not aware of any clinic here that does, like, you might be like one every 45, but I'm not aware of anyone that's double booking. And part of that is the reimbursement rate. The reimbursement rate in Alaska is so good that, you know, the clinics can afford to keep it one-on-one. And, you know, hopefully that's something that will continue, you know, to be a practice up here, because it's definitely a draw. And the more travelers we meet here, a lot sign on for 6 months. And I think the majority that we meet, they're like, I think I'm just going to stay for a year. So that's tend to suck you in. So It's maybe a state to save toward the end of your travel career, because we've met a lot of travelers that have said, I wish I traveled more before I came here because I don't want to leave. So just be forewarned.
My joke was always that there were three places that travelers would go and just like, you know, that was the end of their travel career. It was Hawaii, Alaska, and San Diego. But now, like, since all the COVID craziness and pricing of everything, I think Alaska is like the only really attainable one anymore.
Yeah, it's really funny because a lot of our friends that came up here as travelers are now permanent here, and now they're getting involved in like real estate and buying cars and stuff. So it's been really cool also to like help connect travelers when they're up here with our friends that were once travelers. They have a lot of housing connections. So nice. That's we'll do as well to kind of help out our friends that were once, you know, travelers that are full time that are starting their side businesses.
That's cool. Well, for those that are just kind of starting to think about coming to Alaska for a contract, what are some things that you would recommend they think about thinking about kind of like things to take care of before you jump on the road or commit to an assignment? And then we'll move on to things to think about during the assignment and what to do when you're actually in Alaska.
I would say, you know, the licensing traditionally, it was one of the longer states. It's gotten a lot better. We're kind of seeing licensing turning around like 4, 5, 6 weeks, you know. Okay. I always recommend allowing a little bit extra. It's always stressful when the license is like you're down to the wire. Yeah. So I'd say, you know, maybe allow yourself 6 weeks to be safe. And Devin kind of mentioned earlier, Alaska is really competitive now for travel. It used to be you could get a job here fairly easily in April, May. Now it's really, if you're not here by March, you might be really blocked out for the summer. You know, there's only so many clinics, and once they're full with a 6 month traveler, they're going to be full potentially for that six months. And if that traveler extends, maybe even for the year. Mm-hmm. Some of our friends that came up this year, they had a way easier time finding the setting that they want in the location they want coming up like January, February, which I know sometimes might sound scary if you're not a winter person, but Anchorage winters are a lot more mild than other parts of the state. You know, I always tell people on average, it's usually in like the 20s, you know, we get the teens. There was, I think, 3 days this year that did go below zero. But I think when you think Alaska, you're thinking it's below zero all the time. And I've talked to some people that moved up here from the Midwest and they're like, oh, that's it. You know, it was negative 40 in South Dakota. So, you know, there are parts of Alaska, the farther north you go, that you will encounter those really cold temperatures and more hours of darkness. But in Anchorage, even on our shortest day, we get about 6 hours of daylight, which truly in the lower 48 for the shortest day is probably about 8 hours. You know, it's not a huge difference. I said I would not do it. I said, I'm not staying here for the winter. And then when we finally decided to stay, I was having a lot of anxiety and talking to my patients, and they kept reassuring me. They're like, the light goes away quickly, but then it comes back really quickly. So it's really, you know, you feel that the shorter days for probably about 2 months. And one thing, so we did Vermont this past, we were there September through December. And I actually said, I felt like it was darker in Vermont than Alaska because there's a lot of really good infrastructure in Anchorage. You know, our U.S. national cross-country ski team trains here. So at night, they light up everything so well, it almost tricks your brain into thinking it's not dark. I never cross-country skied until I moved here. And one of my patients said, you've got to get them. They're not that expensive. And she said, having that ability to exercise after work in the darkness will kind of trick your brain into thinking it's not that dark. And you know, sometimes it's hard to motivate yourself after work when it's 10 degrees, but I would always set a plan to be a friend, and that would hold us both accountable. And every time we went, it's just so beautiful with the snow and the moon, and it's just so bright. And every time you're out there, you're like, wow, this is actually really cool, really beautiful. And when we were in Vermont, you know, basically when I got home from work, we stayed in because in New England, there's not a ton of like street lights. And I just thought that was really interesting in comparing the two.
That's a good point. I didn't notice that when I was there, but yeah, Anchorage does have a lot of streetlights and such. I was only there for a handful of weeks for like
the true, I'll call it the true darkness, but you know, you were still getting the daylight. But yeah, it was never a problem visibility wise driving around. I was definitely having a little trouble with home health and being in my Honda Civic trying to get around, specifically for like certain neighborhoods that the plows didn't get to, or certain patient driveways that were right off the road and they were really steep. So I was finding my...
Or no?
What was that?
You have snow tires or like studded tires?
I didn't have studded tires. I had winter tires. And after my first day, I did buy chains. So I had those if I needed to, but you can only go so fast on those. But I did buy a AAA. So I had like one bailout if I needed it. But if you're not doing home health, it really wasn't that bad. Most of the main roads were always bladed. And so if you're getting to the hospital, I don't think it'll be an issue even for a small car like a Civic.
In terms of, you asked for like some recommendations for travelers and preparing to come here. And I was just thinking, like, when you come to Alaska, it is truly a once in a lifetime experience, and it's something that you're going to remember forever. So definitely like setting aside, you know, budgeting ahead of time, for some pretty big excursions. You don't want to miss out on those. So I definitely recommend, like, you know, your job before, you know, taking a high paying job or kind of just setting money aside. You don't want to, when you're up here, we've lived here for 3 years and we have our hobbies, and you can really do quite a bit of adventuring on a really low budget. But there is like a few bucket list things that you kind of have to do when you're up here, and you don't want to feel like you missed out. So setting aside, you know, a few $1,000s for excursions before you come up here is something that I would definitely recommend, so that way you can get kind of the full experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is truly a vacation destination. So many people come up here like on a bucket list vacation. So and you know, the summer season is short. So, you know, to make it financially make sense for the companies, they charge a lot. Like, it is expensive to do all of the sightseeings, and there's 8 national parks and only 3 you can access by the road, meaning you're getting on a small airplane or a boat to get to the other one. So, and those involve fees. So I would say, yeah, that's a great, our first summer, I joke, I think we didn't really save very much, but now that we've done a lot of the major excursions, we can kind of keep it more local to skiing and hiking.
Another thing is, like, if you have a lot of visitors that you'd like to come, maybe kind of almost schedule some of them to come at the same time, because you can sometimes get a little bit better rates with a group and save money on car rentals. And then your visitors can kind of do excursions while you're at work together throughout the week. And then you'll have a lot more time to do stuff with the travelers. Because our first summer here, we have like visitors almost every week, and it starts to be stressful because you kind of want to make sure they have the full experience and the weather doesn't always cooperate. So you want to have time to hang out with the other travelers and do those types of things, but also get your friends and family up here to experience it. But it kind of helps if you sometimes group your friends and family together into one trip, so that we have more open weekends with to have a little more flexibility.
That's a really good tip. Cause yeah, I definitely had probably 3 big visitors, including my parents and my sister and some friends coming in, and I had made sure they were all on different weekends. And, yeah. We ended up doing some things like over again, like I went to Wrangell a couple times, and just different things that I was happy to do again. But in Alaska, it's a far drive to get to any of those.
Yeah, you like kind of get like a 4-hour drive now is like doable for the weekend.
Wrangell is one of those places that, you know, you have to go to, but you dread the whole time you're going there. And then when you're there, you like, as long as you're there 2 nights, it's like, it was worth it. But yeah, the drive in and out is quite daunting. And it the road can vary so much from year to year. It really is kind of old, you know, it can be brutal. So it's, yeah, that's a hard one to do every year. Typically that's like the big 4th of July thing. And everyone's like, are you going this year? Are you going this year? And we're like, no, I need a year off. And like, I need a shorter drive to do something more local. But it is a really cool experience. There's really nowhere like that place.
Yeah, it's really cool. We'll definitely come back to some of those don't miss events later on in this episode. Quick question. I remember on onboarding that I think there's some special fingerprints that have to get done with Alaska. Or I feel like I had to have like 2 sets, like the original set that they usually send in for background. And then Alaska had a state specific background check if you were going to be in healthcare. Do you know how long that takes, or are you guys familiar with that, or do you remember that?
I think that some like facilities will request a second set of fingerprints. That maybe was because you did home health. I think for me, for outpatient, I just had to do the one for the licensing. Okay. And then I think you had to do a second set.
I had to do two as well. And I had to also, I had to do a second set again when I left the state and came back, because I, you know, had left and established income for, I can't remember.
It was like more than a month.
If you leave more than 30 days and work anywhere else, I'm pretty sure, I think that was the kind of the rule that they had explained to me. But luckily, my staffing agency was on top of that, and that was for home health. So, but I'm, yeah, I,
the way I, the way I had it described to me was that if there was a chance you were going to be working with children, that it had its own special background check. So yes, that might explain it, if that is correct. So for those nurses and those that are might be working in a hospital setting, just be aware that you might have a second fingerprint background check that you have to get. And sometimes it's a little confusing because they're not quite sure where to send it. So again, just give yourself plenty of time to get that licensure in, and don't be surprised if that happens to you as well. And what you guys were hitting on with the amount of cash to save up, I would also say definitely save up a good sizable nest egg, just in case something happens that you get there and they don't happen to extend you. Maybe they had a traveler that's been coming back year after year that is coming back at that time, that you're going to be okay for like a month or two, because it's not quite like the lower 48 where it's pretty easy to find another job within driving distance. Alaska can definitely be a lot more competitive in the summer if you're not currently working or suddenly trying to find out a place where to extend out or get a different job.
Yeah, there's a few travelers we've met here that you know, they're here and their licensing can start soon. And I think a couple of them ultimately decided to leave the state because it just wasn't happening in Anchorage. Like potentially you could go up to like Fairbanks, which is 6 hours away. So, you know, in the lower 48, that is like going to another state.
And truly speaking, like most of the clinics here are pretty generous, and they try to avoid those situations. It seems to be more of the hospitals and like rehabs when they make these budget cuts that it's kind of like they can kind of just blame it on someone up above them. And it unfortunately happens. So that is something to be aware of if you're working more in certain settings than others. It doesn't seem to be as big of an issue in outpatient. We do have like some friends that worked in a rehab that it happened to a bunch of them kind of on the same day. So that is something to keep in mind.
That's good. Do you guys have any suggestions for those that are looking to ship their cars into the state?
Yeah, I shipped my car. So I came up here, and that's one question we do get asked a lot is, hey, do any of the companies provide a car? And there are one or two home health companies that give cars. I can't vouch for the quality of the car for the one. It's known as the death trap. I won't say which agency, but I think it's in your best interest to try to get a car up here, especially if you want to, you know, have the true Alaskan experience. And using that shipping method, you know, you can kind of maybe rent a car for a week while your car gets up here. It doesn't take very long, but it is a good option if you're flying out of Seattle just to drop it off and get it up here, and instead of taking the ferry, which is going to have you on it as well, and then just having something temporarily until your car arrives. It was pretty seamless. I just dropped it off near the Seattle airport, and then a few days later, it was ready for pickup in Anchorage. And I think, you know, the prices change probably, you know, frequently, so I can't say, but it is somewhat expensive. But it was about $3,000. But there is some cheaper options, but I elected to get it shipped where it's inside to avoid like any storm damage from the salt water or anything like that. But there are like options that are cheaper for putting it on a shipping container, one out on the top deck. So there is a little flexibility if you're more comfortable with that and the car is not as, you know, new and you're just like, and one of the other good things up here, actually that a lot of travelers have done is that it's very hard to, the used car market is really good in Alaska. So if you do have a car that's kind of on its last few years, a lot of people are able to travel up here with and get their car up here. They either drive it or ship it. And then they actually sell it up here and make a little bit of money compared to what it was probably worth in the lower 48. Okay. And then they fly home and buy that new car they've been kind of holding out for. So that actually happens quite a bit. It is like a little bit of a hack to travel to make a little bit money on the back end of your contract when you're about to take time off. Is like, get your car up here, because if you're planning on getting rid of it in the next year or two, it's like the perfect place to come sell a used car.
Nice. That's pretty slick. I will say, go ahead, Tori.
Hey, the shipping company that we use, Tote, to ship the car. And always mention that you're a traveling medical worker, because they don't give like huge discounts by any means. But I think there might usually be like a limit of how many pounds you can have in the car. And I think because we were medical, they let us do unlimited weight at no extra charge. It always mention it. It doesn't hurt to ask. And I think the limit was maybe 100 pounds, and we were able to really load up the car when we shipped it. And that way we were able to fly up with less baggage, which was nice.
Can you spell that company's name? Yeah.
It's Tote, Tote Maritime.
Nice. I ended up using Matson, Matson. Yeah. For those listening, if you're thinking about doing this, don't do what I did, which was Google how to ship my car to Alaska and then put your personal information in, because they're worse than the staffing agencies reaching out to you right now. I got blown up.
Yeah. Tote has never reached out to me since I used them. I don't know if Tote is Seattle-based or Alaska-based, but I actually have patients whose family members work for it and speak highly of the ownership as well, and they've had good experiences working there 20 or 30 years. So I had no issues. They were very generous, and I enjoyed working with them.
Nice. I had a pretty good experience with Matson. Similar price range was like $2,500 to $3,000. It was nice because I was having trouble finding one that would do my vehicle plus my stuff. Most either just wanted the vehicle or they just wanted my stuff and they wouldn't do both. Matson had a basically a sliding scale for how much your stuff would weigh. So they looked at the factory weight of the vehicle minus what your actual weight of the vehicle was, and that's how they determined it. And then you'll just have to make sure that you're not packing anything that's not allowed into that shipping container. One of the interesting ones was like pretty much anything combustible, so no like lighter fluid, no bear spray, for example. A lot of those things I had to just give away and then repurchase it when I got up there. And that brings me to another thought, which was traveling through Canada. The Border Patrol are very picky on what they allow through, specifically around what they consider like self-defense items. So obviously, if you're somebody that travels with a firearm, you can't bring that across the border. If you have pepper spray, you cannot bring that across the border. If you have a knife for self-defense, you cannot bring that across the border. But a camping knife or bear spray or anything that's not specifically used for self-defense, you're fine with. Have you guys run into any other tips for people that are going to be making that drive in?
Yeah. A lot of people will, a lot of people will buy a firearm up here and then resell before they leave. That's an option. If you do take the ferry, that boat allows you to transport your firearms with no inspection. You don't have to fill anything out because the car is underneath the vehicle. You don't have to declare any specifics about the gun. A lot of people relocate to Alaska that way because of that. They'll bring like a container onto there with all their belongings, like a lot of hunters and stuff that are moving up here. So if you're needing to take firearms, if you're a hunter or something and you're planning to stay for a period of time and get a hunting season in, that's an option. Or shipping through from an FFL to an FFL is the other option that you can do. You can ship your gun here and then you just have to pay like an exchange fee to pick it up here. So that's typically what most people do, either buy and resell, or they'll ship one, or they'll take driving it across the border is kind of not even really realistic.
Yeah. I was surprised when I was going through that problem solving that it was easier to fly into Alaska with a firearm than it was to.
I forgot about that option. A lot of people, when their first family member visits, they'll have them fly it up and then they'll leave it and then they'll fly home with it at some point before they leave.
Yeah. We kind of talked about best time of the year to get a contract, so try to stick to those winter months and stay long is generally the recommendation.
Honestly, and I, you know, I might be biased. I think it's interesting because I would have never thought I would say this like 3-4 years ago, because I didn't want to stay in the winter. And now I really do recommend when people reach out. It's the seasons are so different here. There are certain things you can only do in the summer, and there's certain things you can only do in the winter. So I truly recommend to stay the year if you can and time allows. And it's expensive to move here, so like might as well kind of make the most of it. And you know, there's different like glacier tours that, you know, in the summer there's a river to get to it. It's like a 12-mile river. So you're not really going to see it unless you're getting in a helicopter. Whereas in the winter, you can get on a bike and ride out to see it. And different like ice caves you can go in that it's, you know, very dangerous in the summer with it being too warm that wouldn't want to be around falling ice. And then, you know, the Iditarod is, you know, such a famous thing. And it's really cool to get to go and see it and see the dogs doing what they love. And yeah, there's I'd say like every month there's something big. And Alaska has a lot of really cool like women supported events. Like I did like the Ski for Women and the Run for Women. And they kind of keep those events going all year to kind of keep up that camaraderie in the wintertime. So it's just really fun. And, you know, it's all fundraising for good cause, which is really nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of winter runs if you're into like running. There's 30-mile races, 100-mile races, there's triathlons that are ski, fat tire, bike. There's just so much you can do with ice fishing. And you know, there's only, you know, you only have so many chances in life to get to a place where you can see the northern lights. And you truly feel like a local in Alaska in the winter because a lot of the tourists leave. And that's kind of when you get that more intimate Alaska experience, I think, when you're here in the winter. And, you know, travel for us was part of it, was always about finding new hobbies and getting outside of our comfort zone. And I feel like coming here for a winter really like allowed us to embrace new activities that have now some of them, you know, some of them I didn't like, but a lot of those have become passions. You know, we spent our first full winter in Denver and really got hooked on resort skiing. And after, you know, a few winters here in the backcountry, it almost seems like I would never go back to resort skiing. You have unlimited access to like the most beautiful terrain on the planet. So,
and once you make the investment in the safety gear and the skis, then it's free. So it's very fun.
Yeah.
It's great exercise. I really enjoy it. You just feel like very accomplished.
And there's tons of safe winter activities too. If that's something that like, I'm not hardcore, I'm not doing that. There's still so much to do just on a tourism level in the winter, you know, that's
it's like snow machine tours.
Yeah, snow machining and all kinds of things that are really cool to do, and ice fishing. And
Alaska, there's a lot of these public use cabins that are, you know, put up by the state or the park systems. And they're fairly, you know, I'd say pretty affordable. And it's pretty rustic. You know, you have to bring a sleeping bag and a heating source, usually like a wood stove and or like a propane heater. And it's very adventurous. There's ones that you can like park your car at and spend the night. And then there's ones that you might have to hike, you know, several miles to get out to. And we've definitely had some fun memories doing that with friends.
Especially in the winter, and you bring firewood, and some of them are more accessible and they have stocked firewood, and you can get really toasty in there and be sitting there in a t-shirt in the, you know, in the dead of winter.
Like negative 10 once. That was, some of our friends were like, we don't want to come. We think it's dangerous. And we were in there like sweating and it's, you just got it so hot. So it's, yeah, there's definitely a lot of cool opportunities here for, really kind of whatever you're looking for.
I will say that was one of my favorite experiences. I think I forget what town it was, but we took a water taxi out to one of those small little islands and,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And stayed there with just like five friends and just like got away from literally all the other human souls and, just stayed there for a couple of nights. And that was great. It was
beautiful. Favorite. It's so beautiful everywhere. And there's yurts and those are affordable ways to just get away with friends and make really core memories, you know, off the grid, no cell phone service, just some good music and some good fun.
When I was thinking about coming to Alaska first starting, I was told to try to get a job in Anchorage because it was kind of central and that you can make a day trip out to pretty much anywhere that you would want to go that you can access by vehicle. Would you guys say the same, or do you have any tips for somebody that might be coming in and trying to get a contract for the first time?
Definitely for like getting in, getting in the network with the other travelers, either being an anchorage on the Kenai or like the two hotspots for most of the travelers. But there are a lot of jobs in Fairbanks as well, and they tend to be high paying. And Fairbanks has a lot of really cool, you know, unique things as well. So it's a good spot. And it just, you know, depends on what your profession, you know, your personal hobbies are. And if you, you know, we have people that want very remote Alaska experiences. So there are those villages that are, they're really high paying. You're going to have a lot of Alaska native population. So it's really, you can shape it however you want it. It's just a matter of personal preference. We like Anchorage because there's a good network of travelers, there's good jobs, and it's in really close proximity to the mountains. But some of those remote like experiences, we've had friends that are, have gone to Valdez, and there's these much smaller mountain towns in Seward that it's kind of like when everyone's living in Anchorage, that's where they go on the weekend. And it's sometimes really cool to live in those places and that small town community and be like really in some beautiful port cities and get that experience as well. So
yeah, the cool part about Alaska is a lot of these towns are so far away from each other that we have friends that you can really be a traveler in Alaska if you wanted. You know, we know someone that's done Homer and Sitka and Soldotna, and, you know, they're all hours apart from each other. So you might not necessarily think like, oh, you know, you're still in Alaska, but it is truly a different geographic region. And tax wise, you know, you could do that and be okay on the books as a traveler. So
yeah, maybe it might be a good spot to start if you're unsure, and then kind of visit these places. And, you know, if you are enjoying Alaska, maybe branching out and spending, you know, a few months in one of the other cities and then coming back would be a cool option too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with our choice to be here. We've stayed as long as we have because there's good amenities. You know, there's everything you could need in terms of like restaurants, shopping. And, you know, we're like 30 minutes from the Anchorage airport where we live. And yeah, you can get on some really quick, easy flights to Kodiak, Juneau, Ketchikan, and down to Seattle pretty easily. So I think that, you know, the fact that it feels like a very kind of normal lifestyle here for us is why part of why we've stayed for long. And, you know, maybe if we were on a smaller, more remote island, I don't know if I could have stayed as long as I've been here. So it's just something to think about.
Yeah, but we do enjoy visiting those places and see the draw. Why a three-month summer assignment in Kodiak would be like, you know, life-changing. So I can understand the draw of those places too. And they're definitely worth exploring. It's really a personality type match.
And it's so like very rewarding where if you're the PT in Bethel, you know, if you're, and that's a village, there's no road access. You're taking a small plane to get in and out. You know, if you're not there, those people are not getting physical therapy. So I think that there's definitely a lot of meaningful positions in more of the remote villages. So that's something to think of too. And kind of a double bonus is, you know, you're really helping an area in need. And also they do tend to pay more because they have a really hard time staffing those areas. So it's kind of a win-win where you have a great experience and you're able to save a lot of money.
So for those listening, when you see Bethel, Alaska, you will have to take a flight in to get to that high $3,500K plus a week paying position.
Probably the highest therapy job we've seen.
But those ones typically do provide housing included in that higher rate too, which a lot of people don't know. So, you know, it is a costly to get there, but you do. It is high paying with housing as well.
Yeah. But kind of, it's one of those things where you're probably, once you're there, you know, that's what you're doing. And then you leave when you're done.
We did have a friend recently that told us their friend worked there and really enjoyed it.
Nice. That's really cool. Yeah. I'm glad you guys brought up the fact that, you know, we were just talking before we got on that Alaska is so distorted on any map that you look at. It's much bigger than what you think. And I remember just coming home and putting my little pins in my map of everywhere I went. I like drove all over the state, what I thought. And it was just this small little section in the whole state of Alaska. And so you can be in vastly different places and be much further away than, you know, somewhere considering like New Jersey versus New York sort of situation. And really work around and stay there for a while and be okay with that that tax-free status as a traveler. For those that are coming in and finally at Alaska, any big overarching tips for those that are, you know, coming in, enjoying the state? I think one of my big takeaways was I needed to actually plan my weekends. Usually I just kind of last minute decide to go do stuff. And if you do that in Alaska and you're needing a flight somewhere, that's not going to work out very well. So planners tend to do a little bit better, I think.
Yes, it is, you know, a harsh land though. So with that planning, it's always, you know, I always recommend that you have a backup weekend for the big activities you want to do, and always have a backup option for what you're planning to do, because when you can, where you can drive in 6 hours, the weather can be totally different than where you were planning to go. And sometimes, unfortunately, your plans will have to change. So you kind of have to be flexible with your big excursions, because it's, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's, some people have been planning their Alaska vacation for a year. So those people have come in and they've booked their excursions, you know, months ahead of time. Mm. And, you know, a traveler might have just arrived and just started to look at what they want to do. So I would say, you know, I would say expect that you're not going to be able to do everything. You know, the state is ginormous. We've been here, this is going on our fourth summer here, and there's still things that are on our list that we haven't done yet. So Alaska's not going anywhere. So if you don't check everything off your list, you can always come back to visit or to live again, you know. So
another thing I'd recommend is having a good communication with your clinic manager. And, you know, even in the, starting at the interview process, they understand you're coming up here and you want to experience different things, and working with them to have a little bit of flexibility in your schedule for, like, you know, working on a Saturday and then taking off on Monday will help you get some of those excursions that are full on the weekends. And or working a little bit longer one day and shorter the other day to get a head start on something. That's definitely something that you should kind of screen for in that interview process. And most of the clinics are pretty cool with that, as long as you ask in advance. So that's something I would definitely, you know, screen for in the interviews, is like, hey, am I able to shift my schedule a little bit if there's something I really want to do?
For those that maybe aren't that outdoorsy, when it comes to like winter sports, do you have any recommendations for somebody to, kind of how to spend their free time when they're getting through that, those winter months and those, early spring months when the snow is still on the ground?
Yeah, there's still a lot of, like, it's a very community-based area. So there's a lot of, there's constantly a lot of events, and there's a lot of social media groups that you can kind of network and find out about those events. And there's a lot of classes and things to learn, different skill sets. So there's tons to do that is not as outdoorsy, and opportunities for more photography-based things and art. There's a huge art community here. That's one thing you definitely notice when you get up here. There's a lot of artists in Alaska.
Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes you think of like Alaska winter and you think like, oh my gosh, it's going to be like these crazy peaks and really hardcore. And, you know, there certainly is, but even if, you know, you're just getting into living in a winter spot, you can get used gear here really cheap on Facebook Marketplace and REI, that sort of thing. And you can do like very, very beginner level snowshoeing and very beginner level cross-country skiing. And we have, you know, I have some coworkers that would not have considered themselves outdoorsy. And, you know, therapists, I feel like, are kind of try to get each other outside a lot. So we've really, it's been really cool to watch her get into like new hobbies. And she bought a kayak. And I think there's really all levels, and you have to start somewhere. You know, neither of us cross-country skied before we got here, or backcountry skied before we got here. And it's been cool to learn a new skill and see them grow and develop. And the community is so great. The patients, a lot of them have lived here for a long time, and they're so supportive. Like, spend a week in a clinic or working with your patients, and you're going to have a to-do list of things to see and things to do in no time. So there's no shortage of recommendations for things to do up here.
Yeah, a lot of people that are not as into the outdoors, what they tend to do is they like to look up, you know, the cool Airbnbs and cool public use cabins, and spend more time, you know, just getting to those places where you can drive to, where you're getting beautiful views, but you're not having to exert a lot of effort. So it is about the outdoors primarily here, but there's tons of other things to do. But even, you know, if you're not into, you know, exerting yourself too much, there's tons of just sightseeing from beautiful indoor places. You know, there's down in Seward, there's cabins right on the water with beautiful coffee shops right on the water. And you can drive up to Hatcher Pass, which is a mountain hut up in the mountains, that you can just have a coffee, and they have a, you know, a fire stove right in the center. And of the building, and it's a nice A-frame cabin. And so there's tons of things you can do that you kind of just drive to these destination spots, and the drive alone is beautiful, and just hanging out and reading a book or just taking in the views.
Yeah. And you know, I know we're kind of talking about winter, spring. Once springtime comes around and things start blooming, I took a foraging class last year, and that's really cool. Now a lot of those green things are starting to bloom again. And it's a really cool place. You can really sustain yourself really well in Alaska. We do a ton of fishing. We went clamming last year. So we have a freezer full of salmon, halibut, clams. And then, you know, you can go out and forage for different plants that you can make into sauces or make as sides. And the Alaska Fish and Game put on the foraging class. And I think it was like a $10 class. And now I feel more confident with like picking things and preparing them to eat them. So they do mushroom picking classes as well. So there's a ton of different interests here. And, you know, I do think, you know, the outdoors is the big draw. Like Anchorage city itself isn't that happening if you're like into the nightlife. I don't know if I would recommend it, but yeah, there's definitely some really cool opportunities for like local harvesting.
Yeah, although a lot of people don't know that Anchorage, because of the military background as well as the Alaska natives, it is a very diverse place. So in terms of like diversity with food, there's so much of, you know, there's so much culture in Anchorage. It might not be the best food you had if you've been a traveler and been to all the major cities and, you know, you love ethnic foods, but there is a lot of options for food in Anchorage versus like some of the more remote towns. There's like one restaurant.
I originally brought that question up. I'm from Missouri, and we have my coldest colds in Missouri definitely beat out Anchorage colds. And I think a part of it is the wind. The wind wasn't as bad as what I thought it was going to be in Anchorage. So even though it was single digits or negative single digits, it really wasn't that bad. There wasn't as much humidity as what I was used to back home. We don't have the massive amount of snow that Alaska has. And I was surprised at how long it took to melt off. So I was very like, oh, spring is here. Like I'm ready to go like hiking and all this stuff. And I had to wait a tad bit longer for that snow to go away for some of those hikes. And so definitely wanted to talk about kind of winter and spring options for people. I was surprised at how much there was to learn about avalanches for the hiking and the backcountry skiing and stuff like that. That was surprising. And then Alaska still utilizes a lot of Facebook groups as well. And that can be a really good tool for those that are new to the area as well. Any big tips for people during the summer on what to do?
Oh man, yeah, the list is endless. Like the public use cabins we talked about in the wintertime, like those are really fun. You know, we've gone backpacking and sleeping in a tent. You know, there is wildlife, so you have to take more precautions for like bear canisters, that sort of thing. So personally, I love the backpacking trails that have the cabins on them. You just feel like a little extra safe, you know, being in bear country. You know, the bears don't really scare us away from doing anything. We, you know, we try to hike in groups. That's one thing you can do to you know, make more noise, stay safe. We have the bear spray. We have a bear gun. We did have one close encounter with a bear. It's funny. It was like one of our first weekends here and we really haven't had any issues since, but a gentleman with a bear gun kind of managed the situation, and luckily he didn't need to use the gun. It didn't become an issue, but I felt safer being around him. And so I said, you know, I think this is something we should just be as, you know, protected as possible. So, yeah, I would say, you know, just kind of try to network with some friends so that way you get more comfortable with hiking when you're new to the area.
Another thing I'd like to add is that, you know, you don't have to isolate yourself here with other travelers. There's a lot of people here that they've been here for a long time and are very experienced in a variety of things. And they're very generous in wanting to share their passions with you. Take advantage of your patients, you know, offering resources to you to take you fishing or take you out on their boat or take you to their cabin, because those are the experiences that are like, you're going to get a true Alaskan experience and you're going to learn new skills. You know, there's a lot of people that are really good at fishing. And if you kind of just try to figure it out on your own, sometimes it can be difficult the first year and you go to the wrong place at the wrong time and you're not having success. It's it's really like, take people up on the offer. When someone asks you to, you know, to do something with them, they're usually, you know, they're really willing to teach you. And it's, that's how we learned a lot of our skills that we've acquired here, is going with people that have spent a lot of time here and branching out from our travel friends and learning new skills.
Definitely.
Nice. And to wrap up, any big must not miss events that happen that people should make, or any must not miss kind of experiences or activities that people should do while they're there?
And that's a great
definitely
question.
McCarthy for the 4th of July is definitely like a very unique
experience. I think that too.
But there's a few places that are really popular also for the 4th of July, like Saldovia, which is an island, and they have a bunch of different competitions that are notoriously happen on that day. The Iditarod is, you know, something that people really should experience at least once. And there's actually two Iditarods. There's the start in Anchorage that's more ceremonial, and then there's the true Iditarod start, which is the next day, about an hour and a half north, that is really cool, that you should go to. And then yeah, there's a lot. There's always activities, especially in the summers when like the big events kick in.
Yeah, everyone celebrates. Like, honestly, if you're here for the for a full year, summer solstice is great. Usually a big group of people will start a hike at like 10 p.m. So you're up there at midnight and the sun, like, you know, it goes down, but it's like starts getting bright, like pretty much right away. That's really unique to Alaska. And then in the winter, for the winter solstice, they celebrate that a lot too, which is something I miss when we were in Vermont this winter. They do at the Kincaid, they do a cross-country ski tour where they light up a bunch of Christmas trees. And then also the Eagle River Nature Center, and they light like a bunch of candles. And it's really nice. I think like the winters are long, so people have a lot of like joy in celebrating the return of the light. So I've never celebrated winter solstice anywhere but here. So it's, I think, something unique to Alaska.
Yeah, the people like the car launch too on the 4th of July.
Yeah, that's kind of, you go to that?
Definitely. So for the listeners, so McCarthy is an, it's not in, but it's close to St. Elias Wrangell National Park. You have to drive to get there. 4th of July, they will launch cars off the side of a cliff, and that is their 4th of July. I don't know the reason why they do that. My justification was it's too bright for fireworks, but I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah, I think it more has to do with the fire hazard. So they launch them down towards the river. I think that's the best.
Well, I did. In Eagle River, where we live, they did do fireworks at midnight on the July 3rd. And yeah, it's kind of funny that they're shooting fireworks into like the broad daylight. But it was fun. You know, going up to Denali, the flight over Denali with landing on the glacier, that's definitely not to be missed. That's definitely a favorite. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool experiences, and feel free to reach out to us on our social media accounts. You know, we're happy to give. I kind of have a list. We get a lot of students up here at the clinic I work at. So I have this like big list with favorite hikes that range anywhere from, you know, a couple hours to like a full day, total exhaustion, but really fun and rewarding hikes with really incredible views.
Yeah. And like another thing that people really enjoy going to and is the Mount Marathon race. It's like the steepest 5K in the country. I think it's like 3,000 feet over a mile, and people sprint up and sprint down. That's another major event that draws a pretty big crowd as well. So there's
the PTs flock to that at the bottom, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both runners, but that scares me a little bit too much. I prefer, we've done trail runs here. There's a lot of really cool trail runs.
Running in the reindeer, you can run with the reindeer. Oh, yeah. So there's always events going on, and there's lots of ski meetups and runners, running meetups. And
oh yeah, I was going to say, we in Eagle River where we live, we do a run club that Devin actually spearheaded a couple of years back, and it's still running. That's called AK Beer Runners. And then if you live in Anchorage, the running shoe store has a running club there as well. And it's a great community. People from both clubs, you know, will go to both events, and there's tons and tons of trail runs. You can find a race to do every weekend if you wanted to, and there's ones that are, you know, crazy like Mount Marathon, and there's ones that are a lot more gradual if you're just like new to it like I am. So yeah, I think all abilities, if you're even remotely interested into getting into some new hobbies, there's really something for everyone here.
Nice. Well, speaking of, especially that list that you guys have, I imagine a lot of listeners might be interested in contacting you. Where can listeners find you, especially if they're interested in learning more about Alaska and kind of preparing for that trip up?
Yeah, so our Instagram is inmotion_traveltherapy. So we did, you know, if you do find your way to our page, we did just this year start a staffing agency. So, but we are still love mentoring travelers, you know, regardless of your placement with us or with someone else. So, yeah, we're just really familiar with the industry. Like I said earlier, we've been doing this for 9 years. So we'd love to be a resource. But I want to mention that if you looked at our page and you're like, wait a second, are these guys recruiters or are they PTs? The answer is honestly, we're both. It's a small business. We're it for the business. So if you reach out, it will be one of the two of us responding to you. So yeah, we'd love to see you in Alaska someday.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, guys, for coming on and sharing your knowledge for those listeners. TravCon tickets are on sale. So TravCon conference every year in September, every year in Las Vegas, if you're looking to make lasting friendships. So thank you, Tori and Devin, for coming on. I really appreciate it. And everybody have safe travels.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Travel Nursing and Allied Life. You can find the full show notes below or at travcon.org. Please help us out by rating our podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
This edition of our Travel Nursing and Allied Life podcast has been brought to you by Curavetti Medical Staffing. Join the team that has your back all day, every day. At Curavetti, they work hard to earn your loyalty by helping you succeed personally and professionally. They offer higher pay, extensive benefits, and 24/7 personal support. Let's work together. Curavetti Medical Staffing. You can visit them at curavetti.com, and don't forget to drop by their booth, number 425, at TravCon this September.